Welcome back to the 2 a.m. Book Review Club, where we stay up late talking about books or talk about books that made us stay up late. So, last year I read the cozy fantasy breakout sensation hit phenomenon, Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies by Heather Fawcett. This was my first venture into the cozy fantasy genre, and I have read some other cozy fantasy books since, but Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies is still my favorite cozy fantasy book I've ever read, probably because it has so many elements that work specifically for me and my reading tastes. It has satirical takes on academia. It talks about women in academia. It explores what academia would look like in a fantasy world. And most importantly, it features a female protagonist who is here to do what she wants to do, what she is capable of doing, what she is very good at doing, and she does not let anything or anyone get in her way. I love smart, sensible, no-nonsense, slightly grumpy female protagonists, and that is exactly what Emily Wilde is. Now, there are things about Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies that I didn't really enjoy as much. For example, the last act turns into this action-adventure quest sequence, which, as someone who was enjoying the atmosphere rather than someone who was invested in the plot, I didn't really appreciate, but also under the best of circumstances, I'm not really someone who is into action adventure stories anyway. Also, a lot of the online discourse I see about Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies revolves almost exclusively around the romance. And more specifically, I see a lot of people enthusing over the love interest, Wendell Bumblebee. And I'm sorry, I hate to be like the one person who doesn't get the hype, but I don't really get the hype around Wendell. I think he's a fun character. I think he's an interesting character. And I like his dynamic with Emily just fine. But for me, he is not the groundbreaking romantic interest that everyone else seems to think he is. And that's fine because romance is nothing if not subjective. But if any Wendell Bumblebee stans want to explain to me the reason that he's so incredible, amazing, a cut above all other romantic interests, then I would definitely be open to that. However, like I said, overall, I did really, really enjoy reading Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies. It was a unique, if not particularly life-changing, reading experience. I'm glad I followed the hype and read the book. And so when the sequel, Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands, was released this year, I decided that actually I would like to return to this fairy-infused world of academia and magic. And so I placed my library hold and waited and waited some more. You know how this goes. But my hold eventually came through, as all library holds do, and now I have read Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands, and I am here to talk about it. You know what's really difficult about writing a sequel? How you, as the author, see the first book is never going to be the way that your readers see the book. And this means that your readers' expectations for the sequel are never going to match up with how the sequel actually turns out. For example, I read book one of the Emily Wilde series, Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies, and I saw an immersive atmospheric story with an action-adventure quest tacked on at the end. But having read the sequel, Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands, I get the feeling that the author thinks of the first book as this very, very slow burn action adventure story where all of the atmosphere building elements are there to support the quest storyline. And so when it comes to book two in the Emily Wilde series, Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands, it feels kind of like the author said, well, I have gotten all of the world building, atmosphere building stuff out of the way in the first book, and now in book two, I can focus almost exclusively on what I see as the core of the story, which is the action and the adventure and the quest. Because the emphasis in book two is very much on the action, the adventure, the quest, the danger, and the excitement. From the very beginning, Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands focuses on battles, chases, illnesses, dangerous magic, antagonistic creatures, mysteries that have to be solved, and questions that have to be answered as soon as possible. And sure, there is still delicious food and a picturesque village and scenic vistas, because this is still being marketed as cozy fantasy, but there's not much coziness about the actual story itself. Now, I do have to wonder if there is so much frenetic action, at least in part, to distract from what I'm going to call the lack of thematic cohesion. Going back to the first book for a moment, Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies is a brilliant title because it's intriguing, but also it's self-explanatory. I mean, with a title like that, the book practically writes itself. Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands, on the other hand, practically radiates indecision. Well, we went to a snowy village in the middle of nowhere in the first book, so I guess let's go to a snowy village in the middle of nowhere again, but this time, let's put the snowy village in the Swiss Alps so we can have mountains too. You know, to add variety. Well, Emily made friends with a common fae in the first book, so I guess she's going to make friends with a common fae in this book too. Well, Emily was writing an encyclopedia in the first book, so I guess she's going to be writing something, a map book, there we go, in the second book. Oh, there was a snowy fairy kingdom in the first book, so let's have a sunny fairy kingdom in the second book. Now, I'm not trying to say that the sequel is just rehashing plot points from the first book, but I am saying that I have to question whether the sequel was written with any clear purpose in mind, or if it was written just because they knew a sequel would sell. Generally speaking, fantasy sequels try to do three things. One, advance the storyline, obviously. Two, flesh out the world established in the first book. And 3. Flesh out the characters. The Emily Wilde sequel clearly does two of these three things. In the first book, we established that Wendell has an unresolved, tragic backstory. And in the sequel, we follow Emily and Wendell as they go on a quest to try to, well, resolve it. And by the end of the sequel, we've also managed to set up the narrative link that will transition us seamlessly into the third book. For an atmospheric cozy fantasy series, the narrative continuity is honestly impressive and not really what I was expecting. The sequel also builds on the lore from the first book, giving us more insight into both Emily's world of academia and Wendell's world of fairies. The faux academic tone and language is still here and as delightful as ever, and I really appreciated that we got more characters who are fairy academics like Emily is, which I felt was definitely a missed opportunity in the first book. Half the fun of academia, after all, is the dynamics and the drama between professors. But fundamentally, what was missing for me in Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands was any added depth or complexity for the characters. The first book didn't exactly have deep or complex characters either, but this is a series now. If we're going to be following these characters for multiple books, then I feel like they need to evolve beyond the characterization they were given in book one. Emily is still an outwardly grumpy, but inwardly soft-hearted character who just needs to learn how to better express her feelings. And Wendell is still arrogant, charismatic, and not quite human. The side characters were frankly kind of boring in book one, and the new side characters introduced in book two really aren't that much more interesting, which is a common issue in genres marketed as cozy. But I was really expecting something more from some of the fairy academia characters, like the other fairy professors. Some of these characters were like hyped up throughout the book, and I was really excited to meet them. And then when we did, I was like, okay, well, I guess they weren't that interesting after all. Basically, the entire sequel is resting on our continued interest in the adventures of Emily and Wendell. But unfortunately, my continued interest is contingent on these two remaining interesting characters. The only desires and motivations they seem to have are entirely related to the plot, not intrinsic to who they are as people. Emily and Wendell feel like they've become stagnant, and they are more often driven forward by the plot in this book than they drive forward the plot themselves. Something happens and they react. Then something else happens and they have to react again. It's certainly one way to structure a story, but it creates the kind of story where you care more about what happens rather than who it happens to. As someone who cares about characters and as someone who reads sequels to follow those characters' journeys, it feels like Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands has everything except heart. To me, this sequel felt kind of like an automaton. It had all the right parts, it's able to perform all of the functions you would expect it to perform, but without the beating heart that is the characters and how you feel about them, well, it's just a machine, right? It's just a sequel that does what it's supposed to do and what you expect it to do, but it never really goes beyond that. Now, this is not to say that I didn't have fun reading this book. I know this seems contradictory, but I do sometimes enjoy reading a fast-paced action-adventure story where the only thing you have to think about is what could possibly happen next? And how are the characters going to get out of this situation? Also, the Emily Wilde books are objectively well-written, which is not something you can say about many or even most action-adventure stories. And to make up for some of the less kind things I've said so far, I'm going to read you a selection of my favorite quotes to prove that I did indeed have fun reading this book. Quote number one, "He was occupying the best armchair by the fire, filling the small space with his self-importance." There are a few places in this book where I laughed out loud, and this is one of them. I know I said Emily is a stagnant character, but I do feel like she got a little bit of a personality change in this book. I feel like she became snarkier and more sarcastic, and this is a good example of a place where I was like, I'm not sure Emily from book one would have said that, but Emily from book two did, and I thought it was funny. Quote number two. "Rose's tattoos," I noted distantly, which had always been the subject of much salacious speculation, ended at his elbows, which would no doubt come as a great disappointment to the Cambridge gossips. Again, this is funny, and also one of the few moments in the book where the time period is reflected. Technically, the series takes place in the early 1900s, but this is more often set dressing and aesthetic flavoring rather than an opportunity to do social commentary or whatever, which is the usual reason for choosing an earlier time period. But hey, this is fantasy, so fantasy 1900s England can be whatever you want it to be, right? And this is something I appreciate about the series. Quote number three, "It is as if his time there reduced him to a walking myth, capable only of treading and retreading the familiar confines of his story." There's nothing particularly profound about this quote, but the way the idea is expressed very much resonates with my sensibilities as both a writer and a reader. I know that at this point, this kind of like meta commentary on like stories and fairy tales in fairy books is a bit overdone, but I really like it. It really clicks with my brain. And then finally, we have quote number four. "For the folk are terrible indeed, monsters or tyrants or both. But are they not also ridiculous? Whether they be violent beasts distracted by vegetables, or creatures powerful enough to spin straw into gold, which they will happily exchange for a simple necklace, or a great king overthrown by his own cloak. There is a thread of the absurd weaving through all fairy stories, to which the folk themselves are utterly oblivious." Again, not particularly profound or anything, but this quote truly did put into perspective for me a dissonance I've always experienced when reading fairy tales, and I really like the way it's expressed. Oh, speaking of quotes from the book, if someone from Delray Random House or Penguin Random House is tuning in, I would like to cordially inform you that there is a typo about 26% of the way through my ebook in the chapter entitled 20th September. The text says, and I quote, "What do you make of that?" Which clearly should be, "What do you make of that?" So I would advise you to fix it. I can't tell you whether it's also in the physical version since I only read the ebook, but it would probably be easier to fix in the ebook anyway. So there you go. Typo alert. Overall, here are my thoughts about the Emily Wilde series. First off, if you have not read Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia Fairies, You should read it. It's a lot of fun. It's very inventive. And like I said, it's the only cozy fantasy book I've ever read that I actually really vibed with. Because, you know, vibes are the heart of the cozy fantasy genre. And that is the cozy fantasy book that most works for me. Personally, it's the cream of the crop. It's the best of the best. And if you have any interest at all in cozy fantasy, I do think you should read it. Moving on to the second book, Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands. If you liked the first book, if you want to know more about the fairy lore, and if you're in the mood for an action adventure story where the action almost never slows down and things are always happening and it's all very life-threatening and frenetic and exciting, then Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands could be for you. For me personally, I had a good time, as I've already said, but looking back, it definitely doesn't stand up to the first book, and it just feels like there were a lot of missed opportunities when it came to the characters and fleshing them out and actually making me feel something about them. From the ending of this second book, I can guess that not only will there be a third book, probably coming out next year, but I can also guess the exact conflict and stakes that the third book will revolve around. Whether or not I'll read it is a bit of a 50-50 decision, but I think it'll be one of those books where I'll read it if there's nothing else that seems exciting. But honestly, with all of the books out there and all of the fantasy series that are out there in particular, how likely does that seem? Not very likely, right? I'll always appreciate the first book, Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies, for showing me how incredible cozy fantasy can be, but like a lot of sequels, Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands feels confused, pointless, and would clearly have benefited from the author sitting down to think through what exactly she wanted from her characters. Characters and their author have a symbiotic relationship. The more time and effort an author puts into working with their characters and figuring them out, the more the characters will shine and the better the end result will be. With characters like Emily and Wendell, sure, the narratives that they're involved with, right? The plots that they follow, those may seem straightforward, but as characters, as fictional people, I think there are a lot of directions you can go, a lot of nuances you can explore, but ultimately, the author chose to focus on their potential as vehicles for the story rather than as people in their own right. And I think I'll always be a little disappointed by that. And those are all of my thoughts on the Emily Wilde sequel. So that is going to be everything for this episode. This has been the 2AM Book Review Club. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back next week at 2AM. Until then, have a great week and happy book travels.